anywhere from Tigerland. In any weather you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win. For we're from Tigerland. We never weep until the final siren's gone.
Like Lord, the evening, tiger everybody. Of old.
Oh, he's still there, well, we don't hear it too often these days, sadly, so you may as well keep singing the rest of it just for good measure. Welcome, everybody. Good evening, and welcome to the Monday Night Tiger Car Show. I hope you're doing well from wherever you are around the world. We do say world because we do have international viewers, which is awesome. So we appreciate everyone tuning in. EJ, with the new tablet, we're just fixing some tech issues, but we're all good. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm an absolute Luddite. I have got no tech skills at all. So thanks for helping me out. We got there.
I don't even think what I said helps. So to give context, we're taking photos of things on screens and sending it to each other, trying to work out what's going on. But we got there in the end. They can be handy, those little tablets, but only if they're working properly, I guess.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I'm back in a dungeon. Not Groupie's dungeon, but here we are. So a lovely
dungeon. Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't stay in places as flash as what CB does. So no robes here.
I was going to say, was that a robe on the bed? It must have been a towel. That's okay.
No, it was a towel.
Okay. It wasn't a towel. It wasn't a robe. Speaking of CB, we do wish him well. He's recovering from. I mean, if you talk to him, it's like a major surgery.
I'm sorry. We're going to go with the real come on mans later on, but come on, man. Like, I had a shoulder reconstruction and I turned up in a sling. He's had a little pop in his guts because he had a hernia and he can't turn up for this. Get stuff, CB. Come on.
he was getting lit up in a PM today, which is pretty amusing. And Grok's come down with a bit of a late migraine, so he is a late out as well. He was going to be an in, but that's all right. We will soldier on as usual. I didn't have time to do the bloody which one is it? Which graphic? The North Melbourne, the Death Ride chart graphic. But
oh, come on, man.
I know. I blame the kids. But they lost to Hawthorn, which was good. I actually watched that game. The Hawks, I'm sure we all were. We were pushing for 100 points, weren't we? We were praying that we're going to get there. But so they stay on 18 points, the Kangaroos, in 16th position. So we've still got picks 2 and 3. They're only 2 points behind St Kilda and Melbourne, though. So they're probably the immediate worries, EJ. We need the Ds and the Saints to pluck a win from somewhere. And I haven't actually fully checked the fixture, but am I right in saying, I think I read somewhere that the bottom eight are all versing each other? Is that somewhat correct?
Honestly, the ladder is so split now. The AFL will be hating this. Like the bottom nine, it's basically a 9 and 9 ladder now.
Yeah. I've just had a quick look. I think we've lucked out this week. So St Kilda have got Hawthorn, so that's not going to work. And Melbourne have got Adelaide. So, shit, that's not good. Who the Kangaroos got? Our Kangaroos got the Bulldogs. So all three are probably going to lose at the same time.
Kangaroos are going to get absolutely melted by the Bulldogs.
They're good.
They are.
I know they're seventh, but it's not a... You wouldn't feel out of place if they were fourth with how good they were.
We see teams change through the season and mature, all that sort of stuff. And I think that the Dogs are coming together beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the Bond back flying. Darcy's doing ridiculous things.
Send CB to Carlton. No contact. I love it.
So we're still got pick 2 and 3 at the moment. So, look, I think worst case, though, EJ, even if they pass Melbourne and St Kilda, hypothetically, that's what, still pick 1, 2, 3, 4. At worst, it's like pick number 5, and then they'd have to win another 2 games to get above Essendon. So I kind of feel like a top 5 pick is very close now to being locked in.
A top 6 pick. Because you've got to remember that Oscar Allen's going to Lions, and so there's a – no, he's going to Lions. It's done.
Oh, no, I've got no doubt he's going to leave, but surely he's not getting enough to trigger that higher compo.
I will guarantee
you – they'll find a way. We won't ever see the formula.
I will guarantee you that as they are down where they are and have been for a couple of seasons, that the AFL will manipulate that they get bang, bang, back-to-back picks. I'll guarantee it.
Yeah, I would say the measurements wouldn't dictate if they get it, but they'll get it because it saves face having to ask for a priority pick and then the whole
kerfuffle. Correct.
It's a bit of a workaround, which will be interesting. Now, quick poll in chat. Well, it's not going to be an actual poll, so just write your answer. Do we want to do VFL or AFL first? Do you want to get the bad out of the way and then finish with some good stuff, or do you want the good stuff first? I'm leaning towards AFL first. But we'll see what would you rather do, EJ? Would you rather do AFL or VFL first?
I am going on, as you know, on the way from home. I've got no notes. I'm going purely on my memory of the game, so I really don't care. And I couldn't watch the VFL because of family stuff. So
yeah, everyone's saying, well, most people are saying get the shit stuff out the way first. So we'll go with the AFL game. It wasn't all bad, I might say. Like the result wasn't good, but we'll start with the AFL. We obviously lost to the Crows by 68 points, 8-6-54 to 18-14, 122 at the MCG. Wasn't a great start. The one thing that probably bugged me the most, and it might seem minor, maybe it's not minor, I was still disappointed that we didn't score in every quarter, a goal in every quarter. That first quarter, even though they didn't kick a massive score themselves and it was still relatively close, I just didn't like that we didn't kick a goal in the first quarter. But that aside, I mean, again, similar to the Bulldogs and Sydney to a lesser extent, in a lot of ways it was fairly expected. It's a pretty accurate reflection of where they're at versus where we're at. They're a slick side. And, Jesus, they're three big tall forwards, my goodness. They cause some serious headaches. And in a lot of ways we probably want to strive to play the way that they play, I guess.
Yeah. I think I had us losing by high 40s. I was about three goals out, I think. So it was only slightly worse than expected. It was disappointing because we got pulled apart in the middle section really easily. And there's a couple of real key things that I've noticed for a couple of weeks now that I'm thinking, wow, like surely we should address this. Number one for me is, I don't know if you noticed it on the weekend, but and it's good. It's a tick from an effort-based perspective from us, but it's a cross from a structure-based perspective. You know, the second and third quarters, we really got moved through the middle very easily.
Yeah.
I really believe it's because we got sucked into contest, and overcommitted numbers, and they spat it out. If you look at the wide shot, we had so many people going to one person to try and affect the contest. Then when it goes out, there's no one, there's none of us. So, yeah. So it's a structure thing, it's a learning thing, it's a time thing. The positive out of it is that we actually put in the effort the whole way through, and in the last quarter, I thought we were okay. And there were plenty of highlights individually.
Yeah, which we'll 100% speak about very shortly, of course. I think the effort was definitely there. And I think spirit being broken and effort still being there can live side by side. I don't think one has to outrule the other. And I think the reason why we can say the effort was there, and again, this might seem like I'm clutching at straws, and that I feel okay about saying it though, but Adelaide Bulldogs and Sydney have all beaten other teams by more than they've beaten us by. So to me, that says we're still putting in an effort. And I know there's an element of they would have taken the foot off the pedal at some point in time, but they could have against the other teams they beat by more as well. So they're beating like your Essendon's, your St Kilda's, your North Melbourne. So teams obviously just above us by more than what they're beating us. So I take that as a silver lining positive side, because they could have turned into 100-point losses. Quite easily they could have turned into 100-point losses, and they would have last year. So the fact that we've been able to fight it out and still get some score on the board in the end is a positive. We just want it to happen for obviously a bit longer, but it's just where we're at. Like we can't do it for four quarters, and it was always going to be a rough season.
Yeah. I noticed at the end of the game a couple of the young blokes looking really down. The trainer looked really down at the end of the game. That kind of concerns me a little bit. But overall, you can't fault the effort. And I think that if we look back in 8 weeks' time, we'll look back in this period and say we just play good sides. We're going to play Essendon.
It's a tough block.
We're going to play Essendon. We're going to play West Coast. We might not win those games, but I'll guarantee you we'll be more competitive in those games and we'll walk away from them feeling a lot better than what we do right now. Like right now, we're in a patch where we're playing good sides who are all in that group that are trying to lift into the top four. They're trying to become the Collingwood, Brisbane, right? They're the up-and-coming sides, and we just have to suck it up. It is what it is.
We have to hope that when we play the West Coast and Essendon, we've got to hope that we come out and treat it like a grand final. I know that sounds stupidly cliche, and teams have done it to us for years, but you want to see that real fight and endeavour and belief that they can win. I think that one of the big problems we've had with this last block of games is, despite what's said publicly and whatnot, subconsciously, I think a lot of the players are entering these games already conceding that we're probably not going to win just because of the sheer class difference. I think that's why they get broken so quickly, because they already didn't have that full belief. Whereas if West Coast were to get three goals up or Essendon, I feel they still might believe they can win the game because they feel they're on closer pegging level than they would be to Adelaide, maybe.
All we need is that one game where, and it'll be one or two games. All we need is that one or two games where, like I think early on, I think it was about 29-14, like we were hanging tough with Adelaide, even though we were behind. In one of those games, sometime in the future, we're going to kick a couple of goals and we're going to hit the front. Now, we might not win the game, but we won't get blown away like we have been this weekend. And then we'll go, we can do it. We can stick. So it's hard to watch. And look, this is the first weekend. This game was the first game where I was frustrated at our skill errors. Right?
That hurt us, didn't it? There was a lot.
Yeah. So when we actually got a really good movement through the center, corridor stuff, and it was a handball that dropped below the knee level or something like that.
Yeah.
Right. The positive I take away from being upset by the skill error is that that's a progression that we weren't at a couple of weeks ago. Like a couple of weeks ago, I just would have shrugged or whatever, but I'm now like, no, we've had enough time. You've got to make that pass. You've got to make that handball. You've got to whatever. Yeah. So it was the first time I got frustrated by us shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, we cost ourselves so many slingshot counterattacks. Like so much of the game, we're so cramped up. And I put a video out today showing why we can't go into the corridor, because teams like Adelaide are so good at setting up the ground so quickly that they actually take away the avenue to go inboard. So the time we cause a turnover and get ourselves into space in a slingshot position, like you said, it's handball to feet or into space, and it just breaks the momentum, and Adelaide were able to clean it up. So, you know, that could be three or four genuine scoring shot attempts, or at least genuine forward 50 attempts that hurt us. And a lot of it was experienced players as well. I mean, Taranto had quite a few sprayed handballs, and I've lost them a couple of bad turnover kicks from the back half as well. And those ones did hurt. We killed our own momentum. But, look, it was, yeah. If it was okay. There, skill not so much.
I'm going to shoot Bambi here. All right. I reckon Miller is having an unreal season. One-on-one, he's been our best defender this season, no doubt at all. But his thought process with ball in hand is so slow. And we lost two or three go-forward opportunities with him with the ball in hand just stuck like a deer in the headlights and unable to pull the trigger. But now, as I said,
there was a few.
Yeah, I know. So, look, I want to say categorically that I'm massively positive on Miller. He's been amazing this season, and I don't want this one thing for me to tear him down or whatever. But remember the old fullback that used to mark the ball and look to hand off to someone with a handball straight away because whatever? Maybe we that needs to be a thing, but he is doing such an amazing job one-on-one, winning duels, winning free kicks with tackles. He's doing all the great things, but he is way too slow with ball in hand. Only when he wants to kick it. When he wants to handball, he's fine. But when he wants to kick it,
And like watching back some of the game today when I was doing that video, it's more than just him that are doing the exact same thing that you're talking about. Hugo Ralph Smith was another one that did it. And because I was watching specifically for how the plays were being set up, it stands out so much when you're focusing on that one area that no one's instinctively running into the space and then kicking it straight away. We look there, no one's there, or we hesitate, and then 8 to 10 seconds go by, and the good teams all of a sudden block off all your exit routes.
Yes, and to your Adelaide point, set up so well.
Yeah, and they did it quick. Like they were just subconsciously getting into position while the ball was moving. That's what we were like in 17 as well.
We're not automatic there yet, are we?
100%. And they're six years ahead of us. So it makes complete sense. But we have to get to a point where the players need to instinctively run into that pocket of space and it's got to be kicked to them straight away because the way they shifted our zone broke it down. And then that's when you can do whatever you want. And we just take far too long with the football. Miller did do it. And it was definitely more than him as well. And we need to.
Yeah, I want to be at pains to point out that he's not the only one. But he's a recidivist, as in he's doing it he's doing it more than others. But yes, he's not the only one. But for me, he stands out more than others for that particular one thing. But he also stands out more than others for being better one-on-one than most. So
I mean, even the one-on-one he won against Rankin when the ball was on the ground, like his second effort to go and sort of bundle him over the line or whatever, he had a huge game. And I know the last quarter, Phil Thorpe got off the chain, but geez, it was probably just a matter of time before that happened, to be honest. I thought he's having a great year, but it's definitely an area of improvement that needs to be looked at for everyone. And I think the quicker and I don't know whether it's a directive or not, but the quicker we can start moving the ball, the better chance we'll have of actually moving it down the ground in a much more proficient manner.
And it's really noticeable when someone like Brown has a really quiet game and doesn't get the ball in hand that we don't get that movement. Like he had a really quiet game, right?
It needs everyone to work, doesn't it? Like,
100%. So if he's got the ball 10, 12 times and he's by foot, well, then the two or three times that Miller doesn't pull the trigger don't look as bad because sometimes it's moved okay. When we're all stuck with feet in concrete, it stands out more.
Definitely. I've seen a lot of people talking about game plan and things like that. I actually saw a really interesting tweet from Tiggs today in relation to this, and there could be something in it. He mentioned that we shouldn't get confused with game plan against method. He's like, at the moment, it's visibly like we have no game plan on the way we want to move the ball, but we've got method in the way we're trying to move. Well, if that makes sense. Like they know what they're trying to do, but there's no plan around how it's going to come together. And I'm wondering if it could be bang on. And I'm wondering if ultimately we have to see something next year, right? We can't keep playing the same way this year. There's got to be an addition
to me, we're just in a patch where we're playing the good sides where you can't see how we want to play because they're not letting us play that way. Whereas against Gold Coast, etc., I actually can see that we want to go into the middle, that we want to do this, we want to do that. If teams don't let you, it doesn't mean we don't have a game plan. It's just that we don't have, as you say, the method yet to implement the game plan and make it look pretty. When we start playing well, we'll go, it's a new game plan, great. That's probably the same game plan. We just found better method.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And that's why I felt it was important to post the video that I did today because in all of the clips of the Richmond players marking the ball at half back or on the wing, they all, I think the two were Ross and Hugo, and there might have been someone else, they automatically look inboard first. So their actual first instinct is to look inboard for that pass. But there was already a wall of Adelaide players, and you could not justify taking the kick. So I think they are trying to do the right thing. We're just being denied, like you said, because they're of good sides. But anyway, we could talk about that stuff for a while. But I think we need to talk about some of the positive aspects of the game as well. Sam Banks, I thought, had a really, really good game, EJ. 25 disposals, 4 marks, 4 tackles, 1 clearance.
How many meters?
822 meters gained, just short of a, well, it wasn't just short, but short of a kilometre. And 1 goal, which I really loved, like the sense of awareness to run around Prestia and kick the goal. He's a smooth mover. He's a good ball user. And I really think he's taking some seriously good steps forward in the right direction in that role.
He's already ahead of where I thought he could get to. Like,
yeah,
he's going, excuse me, I don't know if he's ever going to be an A-grade player, but he's going to be that plug-in, serious, good B-grade player. He's becoming very consistent.
Like, this is the thing. This is why I think he can get to B-plus or A, because in this block of 5 weeks, I thought at some point we might see a slight regression, but I think he's averaged like 23 to 26 possessions each of those weeks, hasn't he?
Yeah. So we took with his, we could pick other players where we say, oh, you know, and they are up and down. He's much less so. Much less so. And yeah, no, I think he was probably our best of the weekend. Yeah.
Kyle, I agree. I think he's, I don't know whether this will be a permanent thing or not, but I think he's bridged that gap between his best and worst, whether he's because he's feeling confident, it belongs at the level, whatever it might be that's happened. But he's playing the role consistently well. He's maybe had some weeks where he hasn't been as dangerous by foot. He's maybe played within himself, but he's still found it enough. But yeah, I think he's doing really, really nice things. So pumped for him. I want to leave Elgar to last. Luke Traynor got his first goal finally. It was actually a nice mark from Luke Traynor. And given what we may lose this week in terms of personnel, I guess there's always the potential that he might float forward at some point. We'll get to that after, but we're going to have to be very creative. But Luke Traynor, yeah, a good mark, good goal. Finally, glad that he's finally on the scoreboard because he's been peppering for a while.
Yeah, probably wasn't his greatest game, but...
Not overall.
What I loved was his celebration after the goal. Like, he was pumped. Hmm. Like, he was really pumped by it.
It meant something to him.
Yep. And the boys got around him.
Yep.
Even though the game was gone, et cetera, the celebration was there. And that is a good connection piece to see.
Now, RFC, I know you're going to be pissy at me because I'm saying things like that, but you've got to understand we've got no forwards this week. We're going to have to play someone there. We're going to have to be creative. We'll get to that after.
You want creative? I've got creative. I think I'm going to get shouted down. Now, hear me out.
I wonder if we're on the same page. We'll wait. We'll see how we are.
Because we haven't spoken today.
About this. I've gone real left field, and if you have as well, we could be aligned.
We could be getting put in front of the firing squad.
Jack Ross, I thought, had a really good game. He had a couple of iffy disposals early, but what I liked about his game is that when he had a bit of a bad disposal, he actually followed up to the contest to try and make amends. He didn't just drop his head and you know, drop away, but he ended up with 23 disposals, 9 clearances, 2 tackles, 2 marks. Now, obviously, with McAuliffe being out, we have seen some growth in his CBA numbers, which has been good, and I think games like that against Adelaide surely solidify that his best position is at a midfielder in the centre square.
Yeah, I thought the highlight for me about his game was he was really good in traffic. There were numerous occasions.
He always has been, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, he always has been. He's got a great sidestep. There were numerous occasions where he looked like he was in trouble, but he came out the other side. I thought he had a really solid game.
He did. I liked him. I thought he had a really good game. I thought Nathan Broad tried his best.
No. That is not the left field answer. We are not putting Tigger up forward. Kylie, please. No,
he wasn't my one. He wasn't my one. No. Oh, Tig's in the house. G'day, Tiggs. How are you, mate?
Tigger!
I hope you're doing well, Tiggs. But yeah, it was, yeah. Nathan Broad, I thought, had a very, he cracked in all game, right? Like, you know what you're getting from Broadie. What about Jacob Blight? Now, he had 6 marks and he was spoiling a lot of balls. I had read different pieces that he maybe had some webbing issues in his hand that he was trying to get addressed on the bench, which maybe impeded his ability to mark.
Yeah, he or how true definitely, that is, he but... definitely pointed and said, get me off.
Did he? Okay. Yeah, so maybe did. There was some reasoning behind why he wasn't able to maybe clunk a few more. I thought he was okay. He'll be better for the run. Let's be honest, coming up against those 3 forwards when you lose your structure because of shuffling is not an easy task, is it?
I thought he was all right. Look, I'm not saying he was best on ground, but I'll tell you what, he was far from the worst. Yes. And late in the game when we did get overrun, it was only he got caught out of position a couple of times trying to play in front, and then when the ball goes over his head, it looks really poor and it looks really weak, but I actually like the fact that he took the position. Structure will determine whether he plays again this week, but I thought he was far from the worst.
I'll just say quickly, someone has picked my doozy to play forward in chat. Oh, you can't see the chat, so you can't see what I'm seeing.
No.
Someone has guessed it, which I'll get to.
All right, well, after. You can let me go first.
Yes.
Yes, I know my head is shiny, you idiot. I'm in a hotel room.
The other player I want to talk about is, of course, Jasper Elgar, my man. I've claimed him real early. He's probably the first player I've claimed almost exclusively. 11 disposals, 4 marks, 2 tackles, 2 goals. Look, he probably started a little bit off the pace. I thought, you know, Adelaide were putting out good pressure numbers and he probably was finding it a bit tricky to find his rhythm. I've used his nickname quite not on purpose there. But he definitely found his groove and he literally proved in one full AFL game what I'd been thinking and what everyone had been seeing for the last few weeks, that he adds a bit of a different look to our forward line in terms of firepower, can take a mark and score, and obviously his first goal that almost got taken away shows he's got some creativity and goal sense as well.
Yeah. He just looks like a natural footballer. And look, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but he looks like defensively he's willing to put the effort in as well, which for me was really pleasing.
And that was the part of the game you had to work on.
Yeah, I think people can work out what I'm saying there. He looks like an effort, and I was 100% that they were going to take the goal off him and say it wasn't controlled before he hit. I was like, no, you can't do this to the kid. And I was just thinking, hopefully someone up there can just like have a bit of a sense of occasion, see that Richmond are going to get absolutely spanked and just let it go back to the middle.
Yeah, exactly right. But no, he... I thought he equipped himself well later in the game, especially. And I mean, if we're putting him side by side to Steely Green for a second, I can't see a world in which you would drop Elgar before Steely Green.
I can't see a world in where Steely Green's playing next week.
Unless I haven't seen the pressure numbers, so if anyone has them in chat, let me know. Unless his pressure rating was off the chart. How he gets through with 4 disposals, because this isn't a one-off thing, right? These disposals have been an issue for a few weeks now.
Yeah. We'd want to be talking Jack Graham pressure numbers here for him to hold his spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we all know that there's someone that's ready to come back in, yeah?
Well, depends who you ask. Well, which one?
LA Law.
Oh, yes. No, he wasn't who I was thinking of, but yes. No, he's definitely
really. If LA Law comes in, surely Steelo's got to be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah. You would think so. All right, we'll skip to the VFL because that's definitely a bit more exciting to talk about. The Tigers knocked off the Bull Ants by 58 points. And I know you didn't see much of the game or any of it, EJ, but I'll read you out some numbers and let me know what you think. I'll read out just the AFL related player numbers. Now,
can I just put a rider on this?
Yeah.
I reckon they could put me in the forward pocket against the Bull Ants and I'd be a chance to get a goal. But go ahead.
Possibly. But If we had have predicted at the start of the year that Oliver Hayes-Brown would have been our leading AFL-listed player disposal winner in any game at any point in time, you would have all thought we were batshit crazy. But he had 26 disposals, 3 marks, 2 tackles, 36 hitouts, 10 clearances, 1 goal, 1. He absolutely bullied the guy he was on. It was a tough day for the Bulldogs ruckman, to be honest.
Was he playing against CB?
He might have been. Yeah, he might have been. But I mean, I know that's not the norm for his output, but credit to him. You can only beat the people who are in front of you, and he's put his best foot forward. And I would still like to see him get a game later in the year if he's still performing relatively well.
I reckon that Snack Pack has had a couple of other more than handy games along the way.
Against good opponents too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's coming along okay.
He has. Next, we've got Taj Houghton. 25 disposals, 4 marks, 3 tackles, 3 clearances, 1 goal, 3. Probably should have had 2 goals, 1 roughly. He's clearly a class above. And again, I know it's the Bull Ants. I don't want to hear about the bad opposition. I don't care. You still can only play the people who you're playing against. And he did exactly what he should do against an opponent and shone off about 70 to 75% game time. He's going to be electrifying. Look, I've straight out said I'd love to see him play this week. I know the club has said that he won't play this week in the AFL, and I can understand completely why. But it's the footy IQ, EJ. It's, you can't teach what people like he and Trainer and Lawler can see and do. His sidesteps were good. He used the ball well. And, yeah, he's going to be a serious player, and I look forward to seeing him very, very soon. James Trezise, 22 disposals, 6 marks, 4 tackles, 1 clearance. He actually had a reasonably good game. He will come into contention. My only thing with Trezise, I just don't know how to fit him in. I feel like if he's to come in, it almost has to be at the expense of Hugo on a wing because the back six is so settled.
And I actually thought Hugo was more than okay on the weekend.
Yeah, no, he didn't have a shit one. Like, he definitely wasn't the worst. So that's what I mean.
He was in the top 11 out of 23.
Hmm. Yeah, I think he definitely is. But, yeah, that's the only player I can see him swapping for. But we'll see how we go. Now,
I like Trezise, and I think medium term, as in later this year or next year, he will prove himself to be a regular 23 player.
I think so too. I think he's got the tools to play at AFL level. It's just finding the spot for him to do it, and if he can out-position someone and outwork someone. Who is your player that you are going left field with to play in the forward line this week?
I didn't watch the VFL. I don't even know if he's injured. But I would be saying Kaczynski.
Oh, we're close. I'll go you one better. Okay. I can understand the method.
Yeah, it's all method. It's not form based. It's method based. It's structure based. Just a tall guy, ball to ground. Yes. That's it. Yeah.
No, exactly. So EJ and I are not, for the record, we are not talking about a long-term forward replacement. We are simply acknowledging that we will have no Lynch, no LaFau. We can't put 3 young kids down there to get mauled by the Geelong defenders. We
has need to be a mature body.
To be creative.
Has to be a mature body.
100%. I'm throwing Tyler Young's name into the ring. 21 disposals, 10 marks, 1 clearance, 2 goals, EJ. He kicked 1 from 55 on the run. And then had a set shot after getting a 50-meter penalty. It was a technically perfect kick. Clinical, easy run-up, kicked through the ball, nailed it. It looked as easy as you would like. I'm throwing Tyler Young's name up to play full forward this week.
I like it, but I like it in a different way. And I'm embarrassed. I'm slightly ashamed of myself.
Oh, no. Jeez, that's not a good way to open a sentence.
No. If you bring Tyler Young into the side, I would put him back. And I thought I'd never say these words again, but I would possibly move Noah Bolter forward.
I mean, and this is the thing, right? If you do Tyler Young, you can do that. And yes. whether people like it or not, we saw
And
Bolter did right. He added another dynamic. He flies for the ball. I think Bolter is a better instinctive playing football, like in the ruck or at forward. And it gives you options. Like Tyler could go down there. Bolter can go down there. At the end of the day, I know no one's going to like whatever the outcome is, whoever's up forward. Yeah. But we have to find a makeshift thing to do for this week and maybe the next 3 weeks. And it can't be Sims, Fall, and Lawler cannot be our three key forwards. I don't care what anyone says about experience and exposure. We cannot subject them to that type of brutality on a week-to-week basis for a month of football. We have to find another way.
Okay. I've also come to the party big time now. This has all been solidifying in my head as we speak.
Yep.
I'm all for Boulder playing forward. Let's play Boulder forward. Because he has been terrible down back the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
He has been way off it. Like, he's been seriously bad. And it is scary that we're doing this, RFC. It's very scary.
He's been
deplorable down back. Like, if you were to give me the numbers on the weekend, right, like Miller was okay, Broad was really good, Floster was okay, Blight was okay, Bolter was terrible, and he actually looked better when he went forward.
Yeah, he did. We just need someone to compete. We're not asking him to mark it and kick 5 goals. We just need someone to take care of the bigger bodies and the experienced Cats defenders and just try and half contest to give ourselves half a chance. So we are going to have to be fairly creative over this next short-term period. And it could be just a whole raft of players being tried in that position. Like, it's so
medium,
disappointing that
medium-term period. Medium-term period.
Medium-term?
It's not going to be short-term. We're not looking at 3 weeks here.
Yeah, well, but there might be someone else who comes back into the fold to be able to play a role for us. But what's this? Who's this?
Who is it?
Hello.
CB. Oh, no.
He's like a dentist. We can't show him his face on television.
He's in a witness protection scheme, CB, on 60 Minutes. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good guy. So, can you hear me? Am I coming through okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Just probably the light. I'm in the living room here. Just sort of hold up. Just recovering on the couch. So, yeah, good times.
Who are you playing for this week, CB? I've thrown up Tyler Young. There's a few calls for Bauer in chat, which probably isn't a bad option, to be honest, given he plays forward.
He's not strong enough.
Noah Bolter forward, Blight, Miller, Broad to take the keys defensively. So Bolter forward, Lawler comes in. So there's two good targets. I don't think we probably don't need to change too much. I think Hotton needs to come in for Sonzi. So Hotton can come in for Green. Alger did enough to hold his spot. So, ironically, and LaFau. Yeah, geez, LaFau's the one that hurts, doesn't it? Maybe Bauer. I mean, Fawcett showed us nothing in the resis, unfortunately.
He's out with a sore foot anyway. So is Samson Ryan, so that's why those two are not going to be eligible.
That is possibly the greatest message I'm seeing this year. I'm living with a hernia. Yeah. That is fantastic. And I'm very sorry to the rest of the audience for putting you through that.
No. I'm here for James Brown. Papa's got a brand new... Papa's got a brand new mesh. but, yeah, so probably Bauer probably needs to come in, I'd suggest. So yeah.
No, he's not strong enough.
Are also throwing out, does the curfew impact Bolter? Is it a tight race to get him back by 10 down the highway? But 4:15, so it'll finish by, like, what, 4, 5, 6, 7?
7:20. So no, he'll be 2.5 hours after the game. He's got plenty of time.
Hey, I'll give you one.
We should speak to the Liberal Party and ask Bronwyn Bishop whether he can borrow the chopper.
Well, I said the other day you should get a police escort, and I kind of maybe shouldn't have used that phrase because just given what had happened.
So could you go the other way too, lads? Could you not bring Kaczynski in and play Jacob Blight and Bolter as your two key forwards?
EJ did suggest Jacob Kaczynski. I mean, we're going to have to be creative, aren't we? Like, it's but whatever many people will like, but we have to do it.
I think we all agree that it needs to be a mature body because of the lack of senior experience up forward.
Oh, sorry, lads, you guys are just frozen on me. Are you there?
Yeah, not with it. But yeah, it's curfew awareness. David doesn't reckon they're going to play Bolter. Surely it's enough time to get back. I mean, unless there's roadworks or some shit that comes out of nowhere, surely that we're okay. But you know what?
Have we covered off Lynch?
No, not yet. No, not yet.
I'll shut up.
Right. Do we want to do that? Do we want to do that now?
Yeah, we can go into we'll roll it into the talking about the Geelong game. And so I suppose it forms part of the changes. Tom Lynch, obviously, will probably be missing this week and maybe a few more weeks after that, yet to be determined. Wasn't great, was it? I can understand his frustration, but you can't cave in and do that as a leader of a football club. And whatever he gets. Look, I know it's silver lining, but it was somewhat nice to hear from Uze that Lynch did apologise up front to the playing group at halftime. I think he really acknowledged quickly that he made a really bad error, which cost us a lot of momentum as well. I mean, not that we were going to win, but I think some of the free kicks that were given away, we actually had the ball moving in the right direction, then all of a sudden comes to a screaming halt. I think Jack Ross, it might have been, was running away with the ball. And then the whistle blows and he's just thrown the head back. We don't need any more handicaps than what we already have got with our own limitations at the moment. But, yeah, it was disappointing to see what he did. I truthfully can understand his frustration because he does get mauled and held more often than not. But you just have to find other ways to navigate that when out there on the field as a leader.
Right. I'm gonna absolutely tee off. Right. There are players, key forward. Every supporter base thinks their key forward doesn't get free kicks, okay? Every supporter base. You ask bloody Collingwood supporters about Majacek and West Coast supporters about Oscar, they all think that, oh, we don't get free kicks, we get nothing. Every key forward gets frustrated. Every key forward gets the shits. There is not one other key forward. There's not one other player in the league that has thrown a haymaker like that for years. There is absolutely nothing that defends what he did. Nothing. The amount of crap I've seen on Twitter today, if the umpires paid the free kick, he wouldn't have done it. Mate, the umpires don't pay hundreds of free kicks a week. And no one else is out there belting their opposition. I'm sorry, it's inexcusable on every level. It's 1980s football. And if this was Taylor Walker, or if this was Harris Andrews, or if this was Dane Zorko, we'd be calling for a lynching and a life sentence. The fact that it's our player, if they paid the free kick, give me a spell. Give me a spell.
Devil's advocate. I think both of those things can live side by side because we know from watching his games that he gets mauled and scraped every single week. And then coupled with the shit delivery we give him, I think both of those things can live side by side and not be exclusive to one another. He shouldn't have done it and it's a stupid thing to do. But not just for this game, but if they adjudicated it correctly, for a lot of free kicks that are happening, it doesn't happen.
For every other key forward in the league as well, Michaels. It's not just Lynch.
Do you think other key forwards are adjudicated as harshly as Lynch? If Kerno was being held like he was, do you reckon he would have got free kicks?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I don't see Lynch being that worse treated than any other key forward.
I reckon he is. If that was Kerno getting held like that each week, he would get five free kicks the game easily.
I reckon it's Richmond goggles, big time. I really do. And I think that I can't even believe we're putting up as a defence, and I'm not talking about Arsenal, I'm talking about the Richmond wider community. Oh, if they paid the free kicks, he wouldn't have swung the punch. Give me a spell. No one else in the league has swung that punch in the last X amount of years, probably since Ty Vickery. Good shot. Or Gaff on Brayshaw. They're the last two that I can think of. It just doesn't fit in football anymore. It just doesn't fit.
One thing. Adam Uze, if Adam Uze did not take the paint off the walls with Tom Lynch at half time, he's as weak as piss as well. He should have, mate, there should have been both barrels unloaded in Tom Lynch's nuts from Adam Uze for how undisciplined. At one stage, he had zero disposals and five free kicks against. So he was just an absolute, honestly, I'm with EJ on this one. He was an absolute disgrace in some of his applications. And if he's going to be a leader at the club and show the young blokes on how to play and what have you, he has to be better than that. That was the way to show the young blokes not what to do. So if he wants to be around and part of the club for the next year, he's got to be better than that. And he's been playing for 15 years. So there's no excuses for what he did. And yeah, I hope Uze just absolutely unloaded on him and gave him some honest truths for a bloke on his last contract coming up.
And we'll never know, will we?
He's going to be better than that.
We'll never know. And it was interesting as well, not taking him off the ground too. Uze obviously explained that side of it too. And I can kind of, if we're talking about a team perspective thing, I actually kind of can agree with him on that front, because we were struggling as it was. Normal circumstances, like if it was a closest guy, I don't know. But look, at least he calmed down and came out after halftime and pulled his head in.
Yep.
It could have gone the other way and kept getting wound up. What I was actually really interested to see was his reaction after he kicked the goal. I think the commentators really played it up that he was going to start mouthing off, but he actually was measured and understood that that's not where it's at. Interestingly, yeah. Hugo got hit in the back of the head by Tex Walker. Nothing was really said as well. So
yeah, I did notice that in the charges for the game that there was wrestling on both sides, et cetera, et cetera. I actually thought that Tex might get mentioned and didn't. That was interesting. And yeah. I'll calm down now. But seriously, that wound me up. That whole episode wound me up more than anything this year. And I'm glad I've got it out of my system, but I think I'm okay.
It's definitely divided a lot of people. Some people think there wasn't, not say not much in it, because there was a lot in it, but some people can understand the frustration. Other people don't see it that way. And it's, yeah, everyone's got different views. But
if you look at how hard he swung the punch, right, and there's views where you can see how hard he swung it, right? If he connected with the jaw like Gaff did with Brayshaw, it was way more force than what Gaff swung with.
I reckon he opened his hand at the end.
It doesn't matter. The force
Force
was insane. We are very lucky that the connection point was the back of the head.
We are, but it didn't, thankfully. And that's probably why I don't understand how they've graded it as severe. Because luckily it wasn't severe.
It's a quick can of worms. You've done it. That's a beautiful point.
It's the MRO table and all their shenanigans that causes that. But that's
perfect. You've done it. You opened it. So in the Matrix, getting Tom Lynch to the tribunal doesn't fit with the impact of the blow, but it does fit with the intent of the blow. So they've graded it severe to get it to the tribunal, where for all intents and purposes, he stayed on the ground. He didn't even fall. He didn't lose any time in play at all. So there's no way for all of the smacking I'm doing on Tom Lynch, now I'm going to smack the AFL. No outcome of that strike was severe. He stayed on the ground. He stayed in the contest, et cetera, et cetera. They've only graded it to severe to get him to the tribunal, which, as a direct correlation of that, means that the matrix is cooked. It doesn't fit.
Essentially, Chris O can't do his job, or they don't trust him to come to the right conclusion, or
no, they want to make his there's another point. Chris O didn't do his job. The AFL did their job. Oh, David Zita actually put out a post saying
that for 5 weeks or something.
Right. So the AFL has asked for 5 weeks. If the AFL has asked for 5 weeks, they're the ones that have put it forward, not Chris O. Because there's been other cases where people have got off an appeal on Chris O's initial judgment. For this one, it's like, Chris O, stand aside. The AFL asked for 5 weeks. I'll be staggered if it's less than 5 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Who gets four? They're contesting.
Yeah, either way, we'll leave that one where it is because, a lot of people will not agree, disagree, agree, so on and so forth. But I think we can all agree that he won't be playing this week. And he, along with LaFoul, will be two force changes, which we obviously feel for McKelty. Just comes back and then that happens. Thankfully, it's just a cover. I think they said 4 to 6 weeks from, I saw a tweet today from, I think it might have been Xander Maguire, which is a little bit longer than what I maybe thought it was going to be. But with McKelty and Lynch out, are there any other changes that we foresee maybe happening? In OBJ, we spoke about Steely Green might be lucky to see through the week, given some of the players maybe coming back. Is there anyone else, gentlemen, that you would see that could be forced onto the outer? And if so, who goes out and who comes in?
Oh, Green has to go. Green, Lynch, and LaFoul's probably enough changes. I'd suggest this week Sonzi will get to hold his spot.
I think Sonzi will hold. I reckon it's going to be LaFoul, Lynch, Green out, and then, I mean, Lawler's going to come straight back in, which is lovely. And then it's just a raffle of what path do they go down for the two tall forwards. Is it, yeah, Young and Kaczynski? Is it, I mean, they might roll the dice with Sims and one of the other older guys. I don't know. Which way do they go, EJ? There's no real right answer, is there, to be honest? But Lawler's the right answer for one, but the other ones. Yeah.
I actually think Lawler's almost a straight LaFoul swap because he plays taller than what he is.
Do we think that he's going to be forced to play that key forward role again like he did against North Melbourne? Remember that, how he didn't really get into the centre because of circumstance? We had to play him deep.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, quite possibly. Yep. So, but because of the injuries, it might be a really weird set of circumstances where Steely holds his spot. Who knows?
Well, Nick's just put in that Shorty could be available as well, gents. Would Shorty get a look in?
Actually, you know what? I did see that. So Short Lawler and a mature forward in Steely, LaFoul and Lynch out.
Now, Peter, you flagged, I'm glad you brought this person's name up, Peter, Morris Rioli Jr. I would love to see him come in. However, I don't think we can bring him in to play as a small forward. I don't think he will operate well there. If he's going to come in, it's got to be playing in the middle and then sort of as a sub role playing or a secondary role playing forward. And we're not going to do that. So I truthfully don't think there's a purpose of bringing him in because it's setting him up to fail. Although the only argument would be, will he give greater output than what Steely Green is at the moment? Up for debate, I guess.
Well, the argument is that apparently we've been setting Sonzi up to fail for weeks, so why not do it with another player?
At some point, we've got to just – and see, this is where Houghton's going to fix things a little bit because he's another player similar to Elgar that he actually understands the half-forward craft and can actually do that specific role really, really well. And I think very shortly he will probably take over that from what Sonzi's doing and play it with better impact, I think, long-term. But that won't be this week, unfortunately.
But it also goes to your point that that you raised in a couple of tweets, et cetera, that – even though Ross has seen more CBs, we still haven't seen enough variation in the CBAs. We haven't seen enough Seth Campbell. We haven't seen, you know.
Seth Campbell.
Yeah, well, there's no. But I think, and I think Ross's numbers went up to about 19. But Ross, again, is like Hopper and Taranto in that slower style. Where's the dynamic addition to the midfield rotation? Uze said a couple of weeks ago that things are going to change. We're going to see more variation, and we haven't seen it yet again. Even if we're getting absolutely smacked by Adelaide, we see no difference.
CB just sent me a text. All he's got is three black squares with the circle spinning. We're frozen on his screen. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're right. I know you'll come out about it. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. But look, it's going to be a tough game this week, regardless, isn't it, EJ? Geelong, similar to the Crows and whatnot, they're flying down at Geelong. I know we've got maybe a long-term vision for this season to not drop a game by 100 points. This is another one that feels like it could get dangerously close. How do we go about minimizing the damage down there? And are there any key matchups that you think we can try and manufacture to keep ourselves in? Like Jeremy Cameron, for example. Obviously, I think he's still leading the Coleman. Who takes Jeremy Cameron? Because he is a very explosive and powerful player.
I'd probably put Nathan Broad on him.
You go Broady.
I really like the size and speed makeup that Broad has. I really do. Yeah.
What about the pace, though? Does that get a bit dangerous?
Broady's quick. Broady's quick. We undersell Broady a lot. Miller's too slow. Light's too slow. Who else we got down there?
Well, it depends on what part of the ground we're playing Bolter at.
Bolter is too dumb. But Bolter is not a smart footballer. Bolter needs to play on people that lead him to the football, and Jeremy Cameron is a slippery sucker. I would actually play Broad on. I'd play Miller on who's the big dopey-looking bloke, the young bloke?
Hang on, I've got my team. Sean Manor. No, the tall young bloke.
Looks
Marco,
like
Marco O'Connor?
No, he's Mark, that's the orange bloke. Oh, Shannon Neal. I'd play Miller on Shannon Neal. Miller on Neal, Broad on Cameron. Because Broad's got the dynamic speed to go with Cameron. I don't think Miller does.
So the third problem we might have is if Dangerfield starts to play forward a lot more, he becomes a really difficult matchup.
Yeah, he does. He's been playing forward most of the year.
Yeah. I mean, with how they're travelling, they don't actually need him in the midfield because Max Holmes has gone to a new level this year. Bailey Smith is getting about 40 touches a week. I forgot about he was even there, actually. Tom Atkins does all right too, so they actually don't need to use him in the
game. Tom Atkins is my favourite Geelong footballer. I love him.
It's a strong midfield. I mean, we talk about every week trying not to get burnt with outside speed. This has trouble written all over it in that sense.
Yes.
Like I said, I've got Ollie Dempsey on the wing. Max Holmes goes all right. Guthrie goes okay, close. Manor, Stengel.
To your argument about the lack of speed in midfield. This is the week for a Seth Campbell or someone like that, because we can quite easily get burned out of the centre on a regular occurrence by the midfield mix that they have.
Yes. Yeah, if we don't set up correctly or be defensive enough, if the ball bubbles out, they're just going to zip straight past us and get some really, really good inside 50 entries, which would be interesting. What do we do about Bailey Smith? Do we bother trying to tag anyone in a game like this, or do you just go head-to-head and say, do your best, see what happens? Or is there other learnings we can somehow extract from this game?
I don't know if we've got anyone that has that mix of speed and stamina to go with him. I honestly can't think of a player in our squad that has that right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. Fair point, RFC. That's why it'd be good to have Morrison to have some speed to go with the on-ballers. God knows we need it. The problem is, to Andrew's point, the next post, that they just won't change the mix. It doesn't matter what seems to happen, EJ, that we're rolling out the same.
I actually believe that the midfield mix will change when Houghton is available.
I'm throwing a random possibility, but are we just leaving the experienced guys in there for the now against the gun sides? Could we see something different against the West Coast and the Essendons of the world? Oh, I don't know. But
that's the dream scenario.
I'm with everybody else, though, that it's one of those things. They can come out and say it and publish an article on it, but I'll believe it when I see it actually happen. The fact that we still only used four midfielders in the centre bounce last week, to me, seems just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah. What about up forward, though? We're obviously having to be somewhat creative this week, like we spoke about earlier. Looking at the Cats' back line, obviously Tom Stewart, we know, is a great intercept marker. Jack Henry, Blitzarves, Sullivan. I don't know how we're going to keep everyone accountable, but again, it just comes down to bring it to ground. My only thing that I'll mention, without Lynch primarily, with Lynch, we seem to be very predictable. Can we be a bit more unpredictable without Lynch? Like,
yes,
will
we
not know ourselves, and might it open up some other avenues that we didn't know existed possibly because we're not just kicking it on top of his head?
I think that is a really, really good point. Right. Of the two or three things that I've noticed in our game, one I said earlier on was about all the players getting drawn into the honeypot, and then that's why our system sucks, is because they get the outside and they whatever. The other one is it goes to Lynch so much. The defence know that, and he's double teamed, and they've got a third coming across. We are so predictable. To break up the predictability with him not being there will be a positive. It'll be absolutely a positive.
I guess it only works, though, if the whoever's playing forward, they have to run to different areas. Like, if they all run to the same spot, I still think players like Tom Stewart are experiencing good enough that they'll still do what they have to do. If we can somehow spread the ground, you can't spread the ground because it's a narrow piece of crap, but if we can somehow just have forwards in different areas and give ourselves different options, because it's one thing to be predictable to ourselves by kicking it on top of Lynch's head, but it's too easy for opposition. And, you know, Jonty Fall, I severely respect his work rate and things like that, but we have to try and just move the ball forward differently this week if at any chance.
Yeah.
Will we kick a goal at quarter?
That'd be great. I also seriously don't understand what is so scary about dirty ball. Why are we trying to hit people on we're not at the place yet where that's imperative. What's wrong with dirty ball and making both teams scrap for it? And if we don't win it, at least getting a contest and being able to set up then behind the ball and possibly hold it in. What's wrong with dirty ball into the forward line?
Just scrub it, kick it onto the ground so Tom Stewart can't mark it or Blitzarves can't Thank mark you. It. I don't mind it. I don't mind it because it would actually bring our small forwards into the game, which we somehow keep them out of the game for extended periods of time. But no, it's going to take a lot of chaos, as Travis has put. I really hope in a game like this that we just feel like we've got the freedom to play however we want. You know what I mean? Like, we've got nothing to lose. Let's just play free-flowing, chaotic football. Whatever happens, happens. But just try and have a crack at something a bit different.
We've seen on the weekend, grass is our friend, California Centimia. We've seen on the weekend West Coast really take it up to Collingwood, right?
Yeah, they did, yep.
The opportunity is absolutely there on any weekend. But if we play predictable football, it will not happen.
No, spot on. And, well, to Peter's point, he's also spot on that it's our ability to be able to handle the pressure. Like, we saw Adelaide get 209, 210 pressure rating, and that was enough to make us crumble. It was probably enough to make a lot of teams crumble, but if they ramp the heat right up early, it'll be interesting to see how we respond. It's going to be fascinating. Well, what is the final tip, including margin? And then I do want to do a quick run through a come on man and then get tips and margins.
Oh, geez.
Have we already covered off come on man?
Oh, look, no, I am going to clip an opposition player. I don't need the intro. We're good. Right. Josh Rochelli is a very good footballer. He grew up in the area that I live in, the Goulburn Valley, Shepparton, about 15 k's from where I live. He's a very good footballer. He's a nice young fella. They're a good family. Josh Rochelli is known at this stage of his career for not liking contact too much and avoiding it and being a bit soft, let's call it. Nick Vlosten is as hard as a cat's head. Nick Vlosten got almost knocked out cold twice last week. Nick Vlosten was involved in a contest against Adelaide on the weekend, which in a one-on-one he did not win against his opponent, his much bigger opponent. Josh Rochelli, who was not involved in that contest, then came over and gave him a gobful. Vlosten then said something back and Rochelli went again. Mate,
yeah,
you are talking to a 250-game, three-time premiership player who was known as one of the greatest defenders of his era and who is as tough as guts.
Yeah.
You have achieved precisely nothing yet. How about you shut your gob until you do something? Land over.
Fair enough. That's understandable. Pick your mark there, I think, Rochelli. All right, so what's the final tip, including margin? And maybe even just for an extra prediction, how many goals do you think we're going to kick?
I actually think we'll kick more down there because it's scrappier on a smaller ground. We'll kick 9. We'll lose by 58 points.
Tell you what, I'll take that. I'll take a 9-goal performance and to lose by 58. You'd almost chalk that up as a win. I think the Cats will get us. I'm scared it's going to get close to the 80 to 90 margin just because until we see selection, I'm a little bit unsure how we're going to generate shots on goal. But, if we can kick a goal a quarter, that would be a nice start. I don't want to see any more goals quarters. That seems to be a little bit of a habit that we're getting into recently. But, if we can somehow find a way to kick 8 or 9 goals, I think that would be not a half-bad result. But, look, we go down there. It's a free hit. The VFL team's playing on the following day, I believe. So, we'll get to see both lots down there. We won't have Tash Houghton in this week, but we'll see how he goes in the VFL. And, we'll just keep an eye out for what the forward changes are going to be. It's going to be an interesting selection. But we know Sam Lawler's back and the rest as well. It's a mystery to everybody, so stay tuned for that. But thanks, everybody, for – Kibkiss is the other name we forgot, coming back to the VFL. So this week in the VFL, thank you, RFC Centre, Josh Kibkiss, Harry Armstrong are returning to the VFL this week, which is extraordinary news. So pumped for Josh Kibkiss, EJ. I mean – he's a guy that's ultra-talented, has had a horrible run of it, and I really hope he puts in a good game. I'm guessing he'll be on managed minutes of some type, but hopefully he can play a really good role, and I think we'll see him play some AFL games by end of year, is my prediction.
Look, I hope you're right. That'd be great. I'd be happy if he just played VFL for the year, got through, stayed fit, and had a full preseason.
Yeah. Just the fact he's out back on the park is just a huge tick for him in a lot of ways.
So. It's so good. It's so good. It is so good.
I just think for his own confidence, assuming that form permits it, of course, it'll do his confidence the world of good if he knows he can still get back and play at AFL level. But it's just good to have him out in the park, so we'll be watching that with very keen interest. It's awesome. It's awesome. So, have a wonderful night, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. We've got Behind Friendly Lines this week on Thursday night with some Cat supporters, which will be good. And yeah, the other videos popping up during the week. But if you haven't already, head to the YouTube page and check out the video about the four or the inside kick analysis, and let us know what everyone thinks. If people enjoy that type of video or not, we can keep doing bits more of that as well. So have a wonderful night. And yeah, keep an eye out for the votes video as well, because there might be, yeah, well, I don't think it'll be a conjecture, but I think there's, yeah, one name in particular that it almost took out all five votes, and I think he deserved it. So have a wonderful night. Really? Until next time. Yeah, nearly. But until next time, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.